Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org.
Welcome to Catholic Answers Live. My name is Edgar Lujano, filling in for Cy Kellett today. It's a pleasure to be with you all and to end this wonderful week off. Today, as per usual, and a great way to end the week, we have the one and only Jimmy Akin with us, and we're going to be covering an Ask Me Anything. So if you have any question for Jimmy about Catholicism, Ask Me Anything Catholicism, you're more than welcome to give us a call. We already have a few people on the line. You can reach us at 888-318-7884 to ask Jimmy a question. Jimmy, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much. Glad to be here, and welcome back to the hosting chair, Edgar.
Thank you. It's always nice to sit in the chair. You know, just when I think I have it down, and I think I can, you know, I'm getting used to it. When I sit back in my screening chair, and I see Cy deal with a call that needs a little more navigating, I sometimes think, yeah, I could never do his job full time. Just I get a little bit of that.
Well, don't sell yourself short. You clearly have been picking up some tips. You just referred to a call that needs some extra navigating, and that's exactly the kind of diplomatic answer that you need to give when you're on the air.
That, or I'm just afraid of the backlash when I get back into the screener's chair. One or the other.
it being afraid of the backlash is half the battle.
There you go. Perfect. Well, let's start off with the question for you. So I used to teach high school theology, and one of the first questions that I would get from a lot of my students, some of them who were not Catholic, some of them who weren't really exposed to Christianity very much, when they discovered that Jesus was Jewish, grew up in a Jewish household, they always asked me.
Yeah, who knew?
Yeah, who would have thought, right? Yeah. They always ask, well, if Jesus was Jewish and you follow Jesus, then why should I become Catholic? It doesn't make any sense to me. So what would be a response to that?
Well, we're asking about social groups and the labels that apply to them. And there are two labels in particular that we need to talk about and how they evolved over time. One of them is the term Jew, and the other is the term Christian. So the term Jew actually is newer than many people realize. It originally referred to people who were from the tribe of Judah, and the people who believed in God were broader than that. They were commonly called Israelites from all of the 12 tribes of Israel. But eventually, the northern 10 tribes got taken into captivity, and that left the southern two tribes of Judah and Benjamin. And eventually, the term Judah or Jew, Judahite, grew to include the Benjaminites. So like St. Paul, he's of the tribe of Benjamin, but he would also identify as a Jew. Well, by the first century, you had an ethnic group that also had a common set of religious beliefs who identified themselves as Jews. And that's when the ministry of Christ happened. And Jesus of Nazareth began to acquire followers who believed he was the Christ. And eventually they needed a name too. Now, we learn from early in the book of Acts that Christians initially seem to have called themselves the Way. A way is just another word for road. And so this is like the road to go to God. That's what you were following if you were a follower of Jesus on the way to God or on the road to God. But the way wasn't distinctive enough for some people, and we're told in Acts that it was in the church of Antioch that the followers of the way were first called Christians. So this was not a term we gave ourselves. This was a term that was given to us, and it seems to have had a pejorative edge. It's like, oh, it's like if I were to say, oh, that person, they believe that someone I don't believe in is the Christ. They're a Christer. And so the term probably had a negative connotation initially. And it even seems to have that in the New Testament. If you notice, if you ever do a Bible search, the term Christian does not appear very often in the New Testament. And it's kind of sketchy in a lot of the places it does occur. But eventually we adopted it, which is not something that's uncommon in movement. Sometimes terms will be applied to movements and it'll initially be an insult, but then people grab it and embrace it and so forth. And that's what happened or seems to have happened with us. So you had now these two terms, Jew, which originally meant a Judahite, a person from Judah, and Christian, which means a follower of Jesus as the Christ. Well, originally, there was no real... I need to say this correctly. Originally, one was a subset of the other. So all of the original Christians were Jewish. They were both Jews and Christians. There are still Jewish Christians today. They're Jewish in their ethnic beliefs, but they are Christians in their they're Jewish in their ethnic origin, but they're Christians in their theological beliefs. And they may keep various Jewish customs and things like that. But as the book of Acts also reveals, Gentiles who were not Jews began to become Christians as well. And that then led many Christians to have a Christian identity that was independent of a Jewish identity. And so when your students would ask things like, well, if Jesus was a Jew, why are we Christians? Well, it's because we follow him as the Christ. And that's why we're Christians. You don't have to be a Jew. There are Jewish Christians, but you don't have to be a Jew to be a Christian. And it sounds like most of your students probably were not Jewish Christians, which was why they would be asking, why are we Christians instead of Jews? Because they're seeing those as two separate things. But that's the basics of the answer. Initially, the term Jew referred to members of a particular tribe. Then it came to be a broader ethnic term that included members of other tribes like St. Paul. Then it also came to refer to the religion that those tribes practiced. One person who was ethnically Jewish was Jesus of Nazareth, and he claimed to be the Christ. And he gathered followers who also recognized him as the Christ. Now, you could ask an interesting question of, well, is Jesus a Christian? And the answer is going to depend on how you define the term Christian. If you define the term as a follower of Jesus, well, Jesus wouldn't count as a Christian because he's not his own follower. He's the leader. Mm-hmm. And there's a distinction between a leader and a follower. But if you define it as someone who believes Jesus of Nazareth is the Christ, then he would be a Christian because Jesus believes he is the Christ. So he would be a Christian in that sense. So what we see is a trajectory that over time led to most Jewish people not being Christians and most Christians not being Jewish, but there is still overlap between them. That overlap started in the first century, and it's still there. So that's a basic answer to if Jesus was Jewish, why are we Christians? I believe that's how you said it. Was it Christian or Catholic you wanted
Christian
me to answer? Christian, okay, good, because it says Catholic, I've just noticed on the call screening. And I was afraid I'd been answering the wrong question this whole time. And so, good, I don't need to bolt on another segment about where the term Catholic comes from, although it's also very early. But that's the basic answer. Jesus was a Jew who was the Christ, and so if you're one of his followers, you're Christian, whether or not you're also Jewish.
You know, it's interesting when you mentioned that the name Christian itself was almost I guess you could say derogatory at one point. It reminds me also of the time of the Cristero War, where the word Cristero is derived from the term Cristo Rey, which was the rally cry of the Christians. So the government started using that as a form of mockery towards the Christians. All these little Cristeros, these little Cristo Reyes, these people who are these followers almost trying to demean them. So it has that same origin, which is interesting to see.
Yeah, and we should, for people who may not speak Spanish, we should explain that Cristo Rey is Spanish for Christ the King.
That's right. Absolutely. All right. Well, there you have it. If you've ever wondered, hopefully that clarifies it for you. We're going to go to our first break. And when we come back, we're going to take your questions on this Ask Me Anything in Catholicism on Catholic Answers Live.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool and your homeschool co-op, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Proclaiming the faith, changing lives.
The year was 1978. Mother Angelica produces her first television show, Our Hermitage, at a local television studio. The Christian Broadcast Network requests 60 episodes. To cover the cost, Mother returns to the speaking circuit.
To learn more about Mother Angelica's life and the history of EWTN, visit EWTN.com/Mother Angelica.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. We have a line open, so if you have a question for Jimmy, you're more than welcome to call and ask. 888-318-7884. We start off the show with Caleb in Alabama, who's watching us on YouTube. And Caleb, welcome to the show.
Hi, can you guys hear me all right?
Loud and clear, my friend. Go right ahead.
Sweet. All right, this is awesome.
It's not so loud and clear to me. Could you speak directly into the phone, Caleb?
Yeah, here, hang on. I'm on my earbuds. Let me switch to my phone directly real quick. All right, how is this?
Much better.
Thank you.
All right, sweet. Sorry about that. Yeah, hi. Big fans. I'm a big fan of y'all, so happy to call in. So I had a question regarding, like, I'm a recent convert, looking at being a Dominican after I graduate. So I really should know this already, but that's why I ask greater resources like y'all. Whenever I'm evangelizing, right, in conversation, I'm talking to my atheist friends or my Protestant friends and family members, because that's the low church, non-denom is how I was brought up. And, you know, I can articulate the beauty of the Catholic faith pretty well insofar as demonstrating that it's a cohesive system, right? That's all fine and good. I find myself lacking in being able to explain to them why it matters that they should care. It's a cohesive system, right? Like trying to motivate, like, yeah, it's cool. It's a fulfillment of the Old Testament. It's a participating in the Eucharist, participation in the body of Christ. There's this massive scholastic history. That's cool, but I find difficulty getting that core of, like, look, you're a Christian, or like, or look, you believe that there's some sort of absolute truth. You should seek something fuller. How do I articulate why that matters?
Okay, so let me make sure I understand exactly what you want answered here. Now, you said these people are Christians, which means they already have a lot of truth, and that's good. You said some of them are atheists, and they, you said, believe that there is some fundamental truth, even if they don't think it's God. Is that what you are articulating?
Yes, sir. I haven't encountered a whole lot of relatives in my inner circle.
Good. And that makes it easier to build a foundation on. And then you said what you're having trouble communicating is why they should seek something fuller. And I would assume by that you mean why should they go on to research additional beliefs and come to embrace additional beliefs that are found in Catholicism, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, the thing I would say is two things. The first thing is religion is very fundamental. And, you know, regardless of what you believe about it, it's something that deals with the foundation of reality. You know, if there's a creator, well, that would be good to know. Just like if you want to do science and, you know, you want to figure out the fundamental questions, like what is matter made of? You know, that's something that even an atheist could appreciate. Yeah, I want to understand the fundamental matters of science if I'm going to know about science. And in the same way, if reality itself has a deeper layer and there's a creator, then I would want to know about that too, because it's a fundamental matter. So it's good to know stuff. And the more fundamental the things you know are, the more things they touch. If you understand the nature of matter in science, well, that'll explain a whole lot of things that you see in the world. And in the same way, if you understand there's a creator, well, that touches all kinds of things in the world too. So knowing stuff is itself a good, and the more fundamental the things we are that we know about, that's all the better, because they have greater explanatory scope. But there's also a practical reason, and the practical reason is it's going to help you. By becoming a Catholic and embracing the truths that the Catholic Church teaches, you're going to not only know more stuff, you're going to be in a better position in spiritual and practical terms, because the truths of the Catholic faith are more accurate and comprehensive than what one finds in atheism or in Protestantism. Obviously, Protestants have a lot more truth than atheists do, but the Catholic Church has truths that go beyond even what they have. And these truths have a practical value in helping you get to heaven. As a Catholic, you have a clearer understanding of how to gain salvation. You have additional means of obtaining God's grace, like the seven sacraments, and you have a greater understanding of what can jeopardize your salvation. And if you've you know, committed mortal sin and temporarily lost your salvation, you have a clear path to getting it back. So there are benefits both in terms of theoretical considerations, like knowing more and knowing more fundamental things, and there are also practical considerations that deal with you and your life and your fate.
Right. Yeah, that's so, well put. So because I know specifically, if I wanted, like, let me sharpen this question down a bit for the Protestants, mm-hmm. right? Because the background I come from is low church, mega church, mm-hmm. that kind of environment, right? There is a noticeable anti-knowledge bias, right? Like, I know it's not true, but I've been told that. Like, I remember being told that, like, oh, the fall of man was because they were seeking knowledge, not because they were usurping the authority of God, but that it was the fact that it was the tree of knowledge. And that's what – and so that I'm just saying that to demonstrate that there is a very, like, this idea that somehow, like, knowing God is subservient to experiencing God, right? Like a sort of, like a warped theosis, right? Hmm. Like a – you get what I'm saying. So how would you go about mm-hmm. countering that?
I would say this is a classic Catholic both and. God doesn't want us to choose between knowing him and experiencing him. We should do both. So if you're encountering people who want to have an experience of God, actually one of the best ways to do that is by knowing God. The more you understand him, the more you can experience him. this is something that is, I mean, there are numerous passages in Scripture that talk about the importance of knowing God and understanding Him and meditating on His Word and so forth. So I would spend a little time with, you know, a concordance or a Bible search program or a Bible search website and just looking up some of the passages that discuss knowing God and knowing His Word and things like that. And then you can present it as, you know, why choose just one? We should have both knowledge of God and experience of God, and Scripture supports that. And here are some verses to illustrate it.
Caleb, hopefully that's helpful. Thanks for your call. Give us a call in the future. We'd love to continue a conversation with you. Let's go to California, where Chris is listening. Chris, go right ahead with your question.
Oh, Jimmy Aiken, can you hear me?
Yep. Go ahead.
Yes. Is it objective grave matter for Catholics to practice yoga or transcendental meditation?
Well, it depends on what exactly is happening. Now, yoga is something, it's a set of practices. There's not just one form of yoga, but in general terms, it's a set of practices that originate in India and are associated with the indigenous religion of India, which is Hinduism. But many people here in the West don't practice yoga as a religious practice. Instead, they use it for exercise and relaxation and things like that. And if that's all you're doing, well, that would not be grave matter. It's okay to exercise. It's okay to relax. You know, all those are fine. So that wouldn't be grave matter. What would be grave matter is practicing it as a religious discipline, because it's not a Christian religious discipline. When it comes to transcendental meditation, that's a more particular practice. It also has roots in India, but it's again going to depend on what you're calling transcendental meditation. I mean, there is a transcendental meditation organization, but the same principles are going to apply. Also, there are other people who may call something transcendental meditation, even if it's not connected with the transcendental meditation organization. The same principles are going to apply, though. If you are doing this as a religious discipline, well, then that would be objective grave matter. On the other hand, if you're just, you know, if what you mean by transcendental meditation is, well, for 20 minutes I relax and I try to shut out other thoughts and I just say a phrase to myself over and over, like God is love or Jesus is the Christ or something like that, you're using Christian content as a mantra. Well, which is just a repeated phrase that you can use to focus your attention on the truth you're meditating on, namely that God is love or Jesus is the Christ, rather than being distracted by other thoughts. Well, there's nothing sinful in doing that. So it wouldn't be objective grave matter in that case.
Matt, sorry about that. Chris, we're going to leave that right there. We'll be going to break in a few minutes. But now, Jimmy, well, just to kind of follow up with that, there are people that tend to kind of create a new almost spirituality out of it, kind of mixing the West and these practices. Would that be kind of falling into a sinful situation, making them maybe not using Christian meditation, but, you know, grounding yourself and things like that? Without
what do you mean by grounding yourself?
Just kind of feeling the earth beneath you and things like that, and being one with the wind and the trees things like that, which almost I would say implies a spiritual connection with the earth. Would that fall into maybe something that would get a little shaky?
Again, it's going to depend on what you mean. And being sloppy with terms is something people often do in this area, but you've got to break it down into what exactly is being done. If you want to go barefoot and feel the earth beneath your feet, go for it. Just make sure that you're not stepping on sharp rocks. if you want to feel the wind blowing around you, okay, great, do that. Just don't strip off all your clothes and get in trouble for doing that in a public place. On the other hand, if you think you are somehow one with nature, well, there's a sense in which we're all part of nature, but we're also distinct. And so you need to recognize that I am a distinct entity and I'm not literally one with the ground or the wind. I might feel admiration for the ground and the wind as creatures of God, and that I might feel a connection with them of some sort based on the fact, hey, I'm part of God's creation too. Isn't all the stuff God made great? Well, okay, that's perfectly fine. But if you're going further than that and thinking I am somehow literally the same thing as the ground and the wind and I'm not distinct as an entity, well, that would be a false belief. And if you're using that false belief as a surrogate for a relationship with God, that would be sinful.
Chris, thank you for your question. If you have a question for Jimmy, we have some lines open. Give us a call, 888-318-7884. That's 888-31-TRUTH. And you can give us a call and ask Jimmy anything on Catholicism. When we come back, we'll take more of those questions right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Who was Jesus? It's the most important question in the world. Was he a great teacher? A religious myth? The Messiah and Lord? In Evidence for Christ, apologist Jimmy Akin builds a powerful step-by-step case from history, scripture, and reason, showing that Jesus is the fulfillment of prophecy and the risen Lord. Get your copy of Jimmy Akin's Evidence for Christ today at shop.catholic.com or at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Have you ever wondered about the mysterious, even obscure aspects of the Catholic faith? Dive into the Jimmy Akin podcast, where Jimmy brings together information from many fields as he pushes the boundaries of apologetics. Tune in today to the Jimmy Akin podcast, Mysteries of the Faith, a highly entertaining, informative, and at times humorous show that will help you grow in your faith. Visit JimmyAkinPodcast.com today to subscribe.
Feeling stuck? Feeling like you're not sure what's next? Well, you can be sure of this. God is not finished with you yet. In his new book, Not Finished Yet, Dr. Marcus Peter shares a powerful message of hope, healing, and transformation in Jesus Christ. Read it to discover how to overcome struggles, embrace grace, and step into the life God is calling you to. Get Not Finished Yet today at shop.catholic.com or at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
The world has a lot of questions about Catholicism. It's a big faith, and it deserves a big book of answers. Well, now it has two. Get the Big Book of Catholic Answers, Volume 2, and have 300 clear, reliable Catholic answers right at your fingertips whenever something comes up at work, with friends, or around the dinner table. Order your copy of the Big Book of Catholic Answers, Volume 2, at shop.catholic.com, or pick one up at your favorite Catholic bookstore.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. It's Friday, and we have a show with Jimmy, which means, well, when it's Friday, you know that there's always a new episode of Mysterious World that comes out. So, Jimmy, what's the new episode of The Drop today?
Today, we are looking at the mattress store conspiracy.
I love this one.
That has been claimed, because there are a huge number of mattress stores in the United States. There are actually more mattress stores than there are McDonald's. and people need food every day, you know, so lots of people go to McDonald's regularly. But people only buy a mattress every 8 years on average. So how do they stay in business? This has led in recent times, especially since the year 2018, to a proposal that mattress stores involve a conspiracy and that they're actually a front for money laundering. And so today I look into the proposed mattress store conspiracy, and I explain what money laundering is and how you can commit it, but don't. and so forth. And I arrive at some very interesting results. And, you know, that's part of the fun of Mysterious World is it's all kinds of different topics. By the way, before the break, you said people could call and ask me any question about Catholicism. That's not my rule. You can ask me about anything. And so if you want to call in and say, how does money laundering work? Or how does real estate arbitrage work? If I can explain it to you, I will.
All right. Yeah, that's our rule. We try to keep it to Catholicism. Because I will say, after years of call screening, there have been some weird questions that come through. And I say, I don't know if we should cover that on Catholic radio. Maybe some other day.
Well. I'm interested in not just Catholicism, but other religious stuff too. You know, other groups of Christians, other religions, you know, people have questions about them. Like the question we just had about transcendental meditation and yoga and so forth. But, you know, I think it's also important for Christians to engage science and think about scientific matters. I remember once a few years ago, there was a little girl who called in and wanted to know where atoms come from. So I explained stellar nucleosynthesis to her without using the term stellar nucleosynthesis. If people are curious about something and I can give an answer, I want to give them the answer.
Perfect. All right. Well, if you're interested in the theory, conspiracy theory behind so many mattress stores, go to mysterious.fm to check that episode out, or on Jimmy Akin's YouTube channel. You can check that out there as well. I'm going to have to go back and listen to that one, because that is something that my wife and I, every time we drive through and we see a mattress store, like, there they are, laundering some more money. What do you do? So I'm so glad you're covering this. This is great. I'm very excited to listen to it.
Cool.
All right. Well, let's go back to the calls on this Ask Me Anything Catholicism. You know, if there's time, we'll take a few other questions that are maybe not specifically connected to Catholicism, but we'll see. We'll have to run that by Darren, see what he says. With that, let's go to Matt in Tucson, Arizona, watching us on YouTube. Matt, welcome to the show. You are on the air.
Hi. How's it going, Jimmy?
Just fine. And thank you so much for not asking if we can hear you.
I was just about to. So my question.
Oh, well, see, if every call, let's pause for just a second. So, Edgar, having every single phone call begin with "Can you hear me?" Is that good radio or bad radio?
Tends to be not great radio, that's for sure.
Okay, so what I'd like to do is you, Edgar, can ask on behalf of everyone in the audience the question, and we can get it out of the way once and for all, okay?
All right.
So you ask me if I can hear you.
Hey, Jimmy, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. So there's the answer for everybody. If I can't hear you well enough, I'll tell you. So you don't need to ask.
And a little back secret that I don't think people realize, it's something, and I think it's in the psyche, that once one person says it, then it just kind of rolls from there. And it feels like almost everybody else says it after that. So sorry about that, Matt, for that, for digressing.
A little digression.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No worries. It's an important question, because if you can't hear, then what's the point of talking, you know? But my question would be, could you help me understand for myself personally, and advice for when, as a Catholic, you're evangelizing, when it comes to the aspect of if somebody had prior marriages and they had divorces and now they're married with a new spouse and they're coming into the church, I'm aware of that you need to have an annulment. I don't know how hard or easy it is for that process to happen. I know there's circumstances that affect it in many ways, but I'm struggling with what standard are we holding people to that were never Catholic to begin with? Maybe they came from a society with multiple wives. Maybe they were Protestant and they read their Bible and they see that, you know, what Jesus says about divorce, and then there's the clause in Matthew about except for adultery, and then that maybe that was the reason. So I'm having a hard time understanding why would, if someone wanted to become Catholic and this is in their past, and
okay,
now they're
Matt,
married to their new spouse.
Matt, Matt, you put a bunch of issues on the table. I don't want this question to get so big I can't answer it in a radio time allotment. So how would you phrase it as a concise question?
Trying to help evangelize someone that had to deal with this and why we should make them revisit things in the past and why when they read their Bible, they said, well, look, at Jesus said you can get a divorce and now you have to basically rely on the annulment process. How is that? How can I help them become Catholic when this could be a barrier of some sort?
Are you asking about annulments in general, or are you asking about the acceptive clauses in the Gospel of Matthew?
Why we are holding them to a standard of a Catholic standard when they were never Catholic to begin with? So their past, this is their past. They were never Catholic. So why are we holding them to this Catholic standard to go revisit this when they are now married and moved on? Or and then now they can't, can't say Eucharist unless this has happened.
Right. Okay. So I'm going to answer it straight, and then in conversation, you know, you'll have to figure out what's the best way to phrase it for this person. But I'm going to give you the blunt answer. Jesus did not relate marriage to being Catholic. In the Gospels, Jesus says that if you divorce your wife and marry another woman, you are committing adultery. Adultery is a grave sin. It's, in fact, one of the top 10. It's one of the 10 commandments. And St. Paul says that those who commit it will not go to heaven. So this is a very serious issue. Now, if someone has is living in a second marriage and they don't have the clear light of teaching on this, you know, God will take that into account. If someone genuinely doesn't realize what they're doing is serious, God will not hold them accountable for that. But Jesus does say that divorce followed by remarriage while the spouse is still alive is adultery. And he didn't say, oh, but it's only adultery if you're Catholic, or it's only adultery if you're Christian, or anything like that. He just says it's adultery. And adultery is an objectively grave sin, whether you are Catholic or some other kind of Christian or not Christian at all. Adultery is bad. Thou shalt not commit adultery. So, in order to admit someone to the Holy Eucharist, if someone has a history of divorce and remarriage, even, I mean, you know, just once, it could be more than once, but, you know, if they've divorced and then remarried and their former spouse is still alive at the time, then that would be an objectively adulterous union. And so the church can't just go handing out the Eucharist like it's candy. You know, the receiving the Eucharist is a serious thing. In 1 Corinthians, St. Paul says that if you receive it unworthily, you might even die. And he says some in the Corinthian community were weak and sick, and some actually had died because of the way they were receiving the Eucharist when they shouldn't. And so consequently, for both the sake of the person who wants to receive communion and for the sake of not profaning Jesus, the church needs to look at the situation more carefully and see, was this person really bound to their first spouse? Because not all marriages are valid. That's something the Old Testament acknowledges. There are passages in the New Testament that look like they refer to the same thing, or many people regard as referring to the same thing. And it's certainly true. I mean, you know, I don't know if you have a sister, Matt, but suppose you did. And suppose you married her. Well, that wouldn't be a valid marriage. And so you could legally dissolve it, and you'd be free to marry someone else. In the same way, other people have, it's often without any ill will or without any attempt to do anything wrong, they have, for one reason or another, entered an invalid marriage with the first spouse. And perhaps not unsurprisingly for an invalid marriage, it then fell apart. And they were free to marry someone else. But the church can't just assume that that was the case. It needs to look at the case and examine it carefully and see if there are grounds for saying, yeah, this person was really free to marry someone else, in which case what they're doing isn't adultery. Well, The process the church uses to do that is annulment. And, you know, looking at it, which is just looking at a marriage to see, is it valid or is it null? That's why it's called annulment. And it's a safety measure that is meant to honor the teachings of Jesus and also to help make the person aware of their spiritual state so they can take action to live appropriately in that state. Now, if they receive word that their original marriage was invalid, then they either then validly married someone else, because you said they'd never been Catholic, so they weren't subject to Catholic law, or they now know, hey, I am free to marry someone else, and they can do that. If they receive word that their first marriage can't be shown to be null, in other words, if it looks like it was valid, well, it's important to know that too. It doesn't mean the person can't be reconciled with God. It doesn't mean the person can't become a Catholic. It means that they're going to need to take a different path to do those things, like, for example, living as brother and sister. But this is a serious matter. Adultery, like I said, it's one of the Ten Commandments, and it's one that we're told in the New Testament can bar you from heaven. And this Christian marriage ethic is repeated multiple times in the New Testament. It's in three of the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. It's also in Romans. And so this is in multiple books of the New Testament, and it's something that Christians need to take seriously and thus historically have taken seriously.
I agree with you. The divorce clause in Matthew, how would you explain that to a Protestant? I can't get a divorce. They cheated on me. I get a divorce.
Edgar's going to tell me I have to go to a break in a moment, so I can't really give you a full, that's why I was asking, because we had a bunch of issues getting on the table. There are multiple different interpretations of the acceptive clauses in Matthew. I don't have time to run through them all, so what I'll do instead is I have a book called A Daily Defense, which has over 365 different objections to Catholic beliefs. One of them deals with the acceptive clauses, so we'll send you a copy of that for free, and you can read it there. Also, we have a 20 Answers on Marriage and Annulments booklet. We'll try to send you that, too, to help you build out your knowledge of this area more generally.
Matt, thank you so much for your call. Yeah, like Jimmy said, we have to go to that final break, but we'll send those books out to you. Hang on the line. Darren will get your information, and we'll get them out to you for free. So when we come back, we'll take more of your questions right here on Catholic Answers Live.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Support for Catholic Answers Live comes from the Graduate School of Theology at Christendom College. Deepen your understanding of the Catholic faith through live online graduate courses taught with uncompromising fidelity to the Church's magisterium, from Christology and bioethics to Mariology and more. This summer, you can also attend the Institute for Liturgical Formation on campus. Begin your master's degree or earn a certificate at graduatetheology.com. That's graduatetheology.com.
Alexian Brothers is a proud sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. For 800 years, these Catholic brothers have offered a prophetic and daring response to the gospel. Serving Christ in the sick, the poor, and the dying. Is God calling you to be a courageous disciple? If you feel called to total self-giving as a religious brother in the mission of Jesus, call our vocations office at 847-264-8703. That's 847-264-8703. AlexianBrothers.org.
The EWTN radio listener comment line is open right now for you. If you've got a question or comment about what you hear on EWTN radio, we'd love to hear it. Call 205-795-5773. We'd also like to know how our programming has impacted your life or the life of someone you know. That number again, 205-795-5773. And thank you for listening to EWTN radio.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. Lines are full, so I won't get the phone. Give the phone number out. We go over to Alexandria, Virginia, where Will is also watching on YouTube. Will, go right ahead with your question.
Hey, guys, thanks. Jimmy, always a pleasure to start the weekend with you. A quick question is the story of you're welcome. The parable of the Sadducees questioning Jesus about the woman who'd been married seven times. I think that's a reference to Tobit. What do you think?
Well, I can't say that I would fully endorse that view. I can't eliminate the possibility because in the puzzle they set for Jesus, the woman has seven husbands who all die without children. They could have Tobit, the book of Tobit, in their imagination, and it could have inspired the question. But I don't think that they're directly referring to Tobit, not the way the Gospels present this, because, number one, the husbands, so far as we know in Tobit, who all die because of the demon Asmodeus, they're not all brothers. And so these weren't a series of seven Levirate marriages where a brother dies without leaving children, so his brother then marries the woman, and you go through seven brothers in this parable, but it's not seven brothers in Tobit. So that's the first difference. The other difference is even more important because the Sadducees say at the end of the puzzle that then the woman herself dies, and she hasn't had a kid this whole time. And she just burned through these seven brothers, none of whom gave her children, and then she dies too. And so their question is, whose wife is she going to be in the resurrection? But that's not what happens in the book of Tobit. In the book of Tobit, after Sarah, that's the woman in question, has seven husbands, and the demon Asmodeus kills them all, it's starting to get bad for Sarah. People suspect her of being the killer of her own husbands. And so she prays to God and says, you know, please deliver me from this problem. And God does. He sends the angel Raphael, who brings the young man Tobias to her. And he also equips Tobias with the materials needed to do an exorcism on Asmodeus. So they do the ritual. They get Asmodeus exorcised, and then Raphael grabs Asmodeus and carts him off to Egypt and confines him there. And then Tobias marries Sarah. So that didn't happen in the Sadducees puzzle. So even though they both involve a woman who sequentially has seven husbands with no children, it's not the same story as Tobit. It has some elements in common with the story of Tobit, but it also has some contradictions with the story of Tobit. And so I would say that the Sadducees could have been thinking about Tobit when they came up with this puzzle, but they're not simply referring to it because if they were inspired by Tobit, they've changed it.
Cool. Thanks a lot. Appreciate you setting me straight there.
Yeah, no
can I
problem.
Get a quick follow-on? Cool, thanks.
Real quick.
So I've read, do you have a book recommendation on the Septuagint? I read either yours or Trent Horn's recommendation, The Use of the Septuagint in New Testament Research by Tim McClay. But are there other ones that you think are seminal?
There are a variety of books on the Septuagint. Unfortunately, most of them are not going to be accessible to a popular audience. You're going to need to know how to read Greek and things like that. And so I'm afraid I don't have a recommendation for you. If I did, I would name one. But I would actually start, rather than looking for a book, people often ask for a book when what they really want is just a resource. I would look for resources by going online and either using search or look on some online encyclopedias like Wikipedia or Grokopedia or Justipedia, and web pages about the Septuagint. You could also you know, ask one of the different AI services to help you with that research.
Will, thank you so much for your question. I'm going to leave that right there. Let's go over to upstate New York, where Bryson is, again, on YouTube. We've got a lot of YouTube callers today. Bryson, welcome to the show. Go right ahead. Bryson, are you there? Hello, Bryson. Going once, going twice. All right, let's go over to Los Angeles. Tavo, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thanks. Really pleasure to be able to chat with you, Jimmy.
Mm-hmm. What can I do for you today, Tavo?
Well, my question is this. And by the way, I first became acquainted with you in your debate with Jimmy Fodor.
Okay.
So, really interesting debate, by the way.
Thank you.
I thought it was very insightful. It was a really inflection point for me, actually. So I'm theologically non-committed, but mm-hmm. I've done a lot of work, like sort of looking into the evidence base of Christianity, and I find it to mm-hmm. be, you know, the most evidence-based religion. But I've never really felt that theological shift in my heart, like the presence of the Holy Spirit, that sort of like divine, transcendent moment. And I feel like I've met a lot of Christians who have, and I just wonder mm-hmm. if you have any advice for somebody who's sort of feels like they're walking down the right path intellectually, but hasn't really experienced a spiritual transformation.
Yeah. I guess I would say a couple things. One of them is there's a great line in a song by the Rolling Stones. I find it is very, very true in many areas of life. You can't always get what you want, but if you try sometimes, you just might find you get what you need. I'm like you. I would love to have just glowing showers of warm feelings and love and rapture and all that as part of my spiritual experience every single day. I'd love that. But that's not the path I'm called to walk. And so I've learned that I shouldn't, even though I might want that, what I really need from God is something else. And what I need from him is to understand him. Now, when I understand things about God, it's likely going to have an emotional impact on me at some point. You know, as I think about God's mercy, at some points in my life, I may have some more feeling. At other points, I may not have that feeling. And that leads to the second thing I would say, which is our feelings come and go. They're not reliable. Sometimes they're there, sometimes they're not. That's just part of the human experience. Everybody goes through spiritual dryness. Sometimes it's even part of growing spiritually to learn to not be dependent on your feelings. That's part of what's sometimes called the dark night of the soul, which is a period that comes to a lot of people who are growing spiritually where they don't feel the glow anymore for even a long time. Now, they eventually can come out the other side of the dark night, but learning to depend on God and not our feelings is actually part of spiritual maturity. So I would give you the same advice I would give myself, which is don't worry about it. Don't worry about your feelings. If you perceive what you need to do on intellectual grounds, well, you know what you need to do. So do it and don't stress about it beyond that. You know, it's great to have feelings at least some of the time, and if you're open to them, those will probably come. You may be able to encourage them to come by doing things like, you know, listening to music or meditating on particular truths or praying and asking, you know, for a greater feeling of spiritual experience. But it's not essential, so, you know, don't be disappointed if it doesn't happen, especially if it doesn't happen when you want. It'll probably happen later on. But just walk the path in front of you and leave your feelings to God, and he'll take care of you.
Tavo, thanks for your call. I want to get you a copy of Jimmy's Daily Defense. So hang on the line. We'll go ahead and send it out.
Let's also send him Evidence for Christ.
Perfect. All right. Then we'll go ahead and get those two out for you. So hang on the line, Tavo, and Darren will get your information and send that out to you. Well, that was a very quick hour that flew by, but we have one more for you to ask your question to Jimmy. So ask me anything Catholicism, but you know what? We'll take a couple of questions if they are not related to Catholicism, because Jimmy is always game for those. So hang on the line if you're on there on the line, and we'll get to your question. And there's one line open, so give us a call, 888-318-7884.